cash, every movie costs $2,184.
Hello and welcome everyone to Backtracks Theme Music. My name is Corey Morissette, joined as always by John Mariano. How are you doing tonight, John?
I am pumped. How are you, Corey?
I am doing great because we have got a special guest. In his day job, he is an acrobat with Cirque du Soleil's Ka on the Las Vegas Strip. But at night, he's a world famous author and podcaster. Everybody, let's welcome the one and only Scott Haskin. How are you doing, Scott?
I'm doing great. But you know what? I had a realization yesterday that kind of made me feel a little bit sad. We're coming up on Christmas, right? Mm-hmm. I was putting the tree up and I was thinking about the fact that so many Christmas movies that I know have at least a scene in a mall where there's either a mall Santa or one of the characters had to get a job as a gift wrapper at the mall. And it's really kind of starting to date movies now because malls aren't really a thing in America anymore.
Really?
We still have the Mall of America. So like that counts, right?
We have some, yeah. But, you know, in Phoenix, both or all three of the malls are gone or ready to be demolished. I think one here is getting ready to go. It's changing times.
Well, thanks for bringing us all down, Scott. That's why we're not picking a Christmas song here tonight. We're going the complete opposite direction. I'm going for some Norwegian glam metal. And I'm going to one of my favorite shows from this past year, Peacemaker from HBO Max. I just watched the Guardians of the Galaxy holiday special on Disney Plus from James Gunn, written and directed by James Gunn. And I thought, geez, I really want to do a song from Peacemaker because that's a great show. And I'm a big hair metal guy, glam metal guy. And it's got a tremendous soundtrack. Like, geez, I could pick anything. I could pick, you know, Rat. I can pick Choir Boys. I love the Choir Boys. But let's go right to the theme song, Wigwam. And I pitched that to John. And John had an interesting tidbit when it came to the intro of Peacemaker.
Yeah. So it's a really small world, I guess. But I went to high school with the woman who runs the studio who did the opening credits to this, the show. And not only that, like, her credits are ridiculous. Aaron Swarovski of Swarovski Studios is incredible. Has just an incredible body of work. You know, Avengers: Infinity War. I'll lead off with Avengers: Infinity War just because. both Guardians of the Galaxy movies, Peacemaker, Doctor Strange, Us, Community, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, The Killing. The Ghost Whisperer, just to name a few. Now, I have some memories of Aaron in school, and I was an up-and-coming artist. I was in my senior year, and I took like a mentorship program where I was mentoring the other art classes. My claim to fame in high school was I created like 100 cartoon characters. I was supposed to be like the thing coming out of one of the things coming out of our high school that would be something. So I took a bunch of like mentorship stuff and art stuff my senior year, and Erin was in the grade below mine, and I was mentoring her class. And I remember seeing some of Erin's work, and the only words of wisdom I was able to give her were, "Don't stop! Like you're absolutely on the right path, and I can't wait to see what you're gonna do." Little did I know back in '94 where she would end up. Right, like she's carved out quite the career for herself. I was watching the credits and I saw Swarovski, so I like tweeted at her. I'm like is this your relative? And she's like, no, it's me. Like, no shit. And like I could not be more proud of her. She collaborates with James Gunn. I believe she'll be working on more of his series, and I have a strong feeling now that he's running DC and they have such a good relationship. I just have some strong feelings that Aaron may be doing more work with James Gunn in the future.
Well, I think it's great that now two of you have made something out of yourselves out of that high school. Aaron, working with all these famous filmmakers, and you, John, as a world famous podcaster. You guys are probably one in 1A out of your school, correct?
Yeah. But it's really like one, and then like I'm like triple E or like whatever, like you go down that scale, you go through the numbers, you go through the letters, and then you start going through the letters again, and then I'm probably right. I'm probably like 1A or 2, but like way down on the list, dude.
Well, you're number one in our hearts, John.
Well, I cannot be prouder of her. This opening credit sequence, I wish that Scott had a chance to see it before we start. It's really something special. It was all the rage on Twitter when the show came out. People are doing the dance. They do this choreographed dance. And Aaron's company does the typography that goes around the dance. Like that, that's her company, does a lot of the typography for the credits. And you know, she has to work with the choreographer, the director, and everybody to make this all come together. Mm-hmm. And, you know, watching John Cena do essentially line dancing in the opening credits is just so joyous. Like, it's so happy and effervescent. And gives you a sense of how ridiculous this show actually is.
You know, now that you said that, for some reason, I'm picturing John Cena and Will Smith doing the Thriller dance together, and I have no idea where that came from, but I like the visual.
Well, you're not far off. And now, because John brought it up, when we're done listening to the songs, we'll listen to the song all the way through. We will play the opening credit sequence from Peacemaker so you can enjoy it with us, because I'm dying to see it again. This thing went, what did the kids say? It went viral. Way back when, 10 months ago, when Peacemaker came out, everyone was talking about the opening title sequence. Very masterfully well done. But in order to have a masterful title sequence, you need a song. And when you need a song, you go to Norwegian glam metal legends Wigwam. This is a band I knew nothing about until I heard this song as the opener of Peacemaker. And kind of dug the track. I've listened to a lot of Wigwam since. They're still out there. Their lineup consists of vocalist Glam, guitarist Teeny, bassist Flash, and drummer Sporty. I can't pronounce their Norwegian names, so we're going to go with their Spice Girl names, if you will. But I know that they competed in the Eurovision Song Contest, and they placed ninth with a song I never heard of called In My Dreams. But they're back together, they're touring, and they're more popular than ever, thanks to this song. What do you say, boys? Let's play a little Wigwam from 2010. This is Do You Want to Taste It?
Do you really want to? Do you really want to taste it? Make a move extreme. Shortcut to your dreams. A blow straight to the stars on that flying thing.
I love that. And again, I don't think English is their first language, but you're going to float straight to the stars on that flying thing. It's just a flying thing. You don't need to know more than that.
I mean, to give Scott a little bit more context, this is a show where the main character, Peacemaker, Christopher Smith, played by John Cena, thinks he is a superhero vigilante, but has such a code of honor that he basically murders in the name of justice. And his sidekick is an eagle with the nickname Eagly, who hugs him in one of the episodes with its wings come around John Cena and hugs John Cena, and John Cena hugs him back. And his humble brag the entire series is, I was hugged by an eagle.
That is another interesting visual. I was kind of thinking, you know, from an energetic standpoint, this would be a great WWE entrance song.
Oh, 100%. Yeah, good call.
Yeah, and maybe not for John Cena, but well, like a B player.
I know you've got into some professional wrestling. Maybe you can adopt this as your theme song as you walk out.
Yeah, I had a whole wrestling character drawn up one day. I was going to be Daddy's Chubby Little Secret. And, you know, never win a match. Just be like the fall guy for everyone to win their first match. And then my backstory was going to be like, he was embarrassed by me because I was just, you know, ridiculous. And he would put me in the closet and just feed me under the little gap under the door when company came over. And that was why I was called Daddy's Chubby Little Secret. Vince McMahon never went for it.
Really? So well, maybe it should come out. Came. I think you need to come out as Hangry Scott Haskett and just be hangry and angry and come out to Do You Want to Taste It? It all works. John will design you a costume. He's a great illustrator. He'll design the costume. It's going to be phenomenal. You're going to win the world title, I tell you.
It works on so many levels.
I want to embrace Scott's Vegas side, and I want to wheel out like a chafing dish, where I then have food that I bring out with Scott. That whether he wins or loses the match, if he wins the match, we like shove the food in the loser's face, and if he loses the match, I use the food to like revive him to walk him back to the back after the match.
That's gold. Triple H, are you listening? You want to sign this guy to WWE? I'm telling you.
That's right. I will say, as far as the song goes, though, it's got a good groove to it. Lyrically, it's a little questionable, but it's got a great groove. I love the bass line.
Wait till you get to the chick harpoon. I tell you, things are going to get good here, my friend. Let's keep going.
A happy winger song.
Is there such a thing as a happy winger song?
It would be this.
Okay. Get the snow blind game. Make a tune, chick harpoon in the world beyond. Got a beat, got a heat on the phone. It's straight. Tear your world apart. Once the magic starts. John, have you ever thrown the dog the invisible bone?
I that sounds very sexual with a dog.
I don't even know what the fuck that means. Yeah. Throw the dog the invisible bone. I'm trying to get into a Norwegian mindset. I still don't know what the fuck that means. Scott, enlighten us. Angry Scott Haskin.
I don't know where to start. That's one of the most ridiculous things I've ever heard.
So coupling up on Scott's ridiculousness, I'm going to continue to reveal things about the show to Scott, so that way we can see how well this song fits in with the show. So on this show, Robert Patrick from the Terminator 2, like the guy who turns into liquid metal in that movie, plays John Cena's dad, who, you know, for lack of a better word or lack of a better description, plays like a grand wizard in the Ku Klux Klan / supervillain in the show.
Okay.
And that's
a good role.
And John Cena has to like confront him as his father and as his villain who's trying to kill him.
So he's basically Darth Vader.
I mean, kind of.
Darth Vader was horrifically racist?
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah. But Peacemaker is a piece of shit, but his dad is an unredeemable piece of shit. That's kind of, you're cheering for the anti-hero to get one over on his dad, who's just completely unredeemable. He's awful.
So is this a comedy or a drama or an action? How would you categorize the show?
Yep. Yes. Yes, you are right. Yep.
Yes.
All right.
It's a James Gunn series. That's really all you need to know.
That's true. Jet in gear, anything to get you out of here. Gotta go hit that ride to the setting sun. I gotta leave this mess behind. Gotta cruise on the blues, got a life to find. What you need is better read on a dotted line. Welcome to the show. Do you really wanna take that? What's going on? Must come down. Is it just my imagination, or am I hearing Queen and Poison and like eight different bands in this song from a vocal perspective?
There's a lot of Poison, even some Winger. You talked about Winger. I hear a little Kip Winger in there too, especially you talk about that bass line. Very kind of Winger-esque, right? Yeah. Queen, I think, might be a little bit of a reach for me. I wouldn't put Wigwam in the Queen influence sphere. I put Queen on a higher pedestal than I do Wigwam, but definitely, like, you can tell, you know, Poison, Winger, Slaughter, all the big glam bands from the 80s were hugely influential in Norway in 2010 when Wigwam recorded this song.
Yeah, it's got a lot of variety to it, but I have to say I like the production. It sounds really good.
Yeah,
it's basically musical junk food, Scott, right? Mm. Like, in the best way possible, it's like you go to 7-Eleven at like 11:30, maybe even like 2:15 in the morning. This is like your 2:15 run. I'm craving something. I don't know what I'm craving, and you just raid their shit shelf, right? and that's what this song is. Is like just pure sugar and fat and like basically diabetes in a song.
That is a brilliant analogy,
Very apt.
But you know, again, whenever we stop, I have to give you a tidbit about the show.
Yes.
One of the minor villains, like the B villains in the show, is a character named Judo Master. And Judo Master, he's like really good at kung fu, but not really super powered. So he's really agile and really good at what he does. And he's really just kind of known for being a dick who loves Cheetos in the show.
Okay.
So like bringing it back to like 7-Eleven, they stop at like he stops at a convenience store at some point, and he's in his ridiculous costume in the middle of the day, eating his Cheetos, and he's really short. So these kids or whatever start picking on him, and he just kicks the shit out of them.
It sounds like a fun show. I kind of wish I had HBO now.
Yeah, we'll have to see how we can get this to you.
It was just released on Blu-ray. My wife informed me as she was giving me ideas for Christmas gifts for her because she loves Peacemaker. And who could forget the big alien cow featured prominently at the end of the series with the giant tooth and the big eyes that just, it's a creepy visual I haven't been able to shake. But essentially, it's about these alien butterflies that are trying to take over Earth, but they can't eat anything on Earth. They have to feed from this ginormous cow. I really can't describe it. You really got to see the show. It's worth a watch.
You sold me at the introduction of something bovine. I'm good.
There is an action sequence in one of the first episodes where John Cena, you know, gets hit on by what we don't realize is one of the villains, and he has sex with her, and so now it's naked John Cena, and this thing's like super powered, but like looks like a woman. And it's naked John Cena getting thrown around a hotel room, getting like his ass kicked by a woman half his size.
And they are fighting to 7 o'clock by the London Choir Boys. Come on. If that doesn't do it for you.
But did he give her the invisible bone?
That remains to be seen.
We don't know what that means. She probably couldn't see him anyway.
I understood that reference.
He ghosted her.
Even just musically, Scott, we're talking Choir Boys. There's a huge scene to Hanoi Rocks. John Cena alone at a piano delivers a soulful performance of Home Sweet Home by Motley Crue. Like, wow. Even just musically, this thing is worth a watch.
Sounds good.
But we've got a minute and 11 left in Wigwam. Do you really want to taste it? Here we go. Oh, you're dull, the invisible bone. That's Wigwam. Do you want to taste it? You can't help but be in a good mood after listening to a little Wigwam on a Tuesday night as we record this. Scott, what did you think of the song?
I like it. It's got some weird lyrics, but I think that overall the sound of it's really good. I like the energy of it. Interestingly, you know, you have the lyrics posted and it says, throw your dog the invisible bone times two because it repeats. But I actually half expected him to say times two or X two in the lyrics. No, I think it's good. I love the vocal layering that they did on this between the backups and the lead, especially in the chorus. I think it's got a great sound to it. I dig this song.
So I just pulled two facts about this. So one of them's kind of a spoiler for Scott, but so I'm going to try to talk around the spoiler a little bit, but the cow that Corey alluded to earlier, James Gunn put this song in the opening credits because he felt like the entire series was building to the scene with the cow, that we get to when the song actually plays in the show. And Corey right now is showing Scott, I think, a picture of said cow, which doesn't look like an actual cow, but like kind of like a porg with six eyes.
It's kind of like a cross between a spider and the creature from the Black Lagoon.
Yeah. And then I also found out the meaning of the lyric about the invisible bone guys.
Oh.
So James Gunn gives an explanation about that particular lyric and what it means to him. And he says, you know when assholes fuck with dogs by pretending to throw something and the dog runs and gets it and then the jackass laughs because he's smarter than the dog? That's the invisible bone.
Ah, well done. Another mystery solved.
I get it.
I want to know, on this song, was this song written for the show or is it an older song that was licensed?
No, it's an older song. It was written and released in 2010. James Gunn was just a fan of Wigwam and licensed it for the show and actually gave them kind of a new life. Apparently, they were dropped by their booking agency before the show was released. But ever since the show came out and that title sequence became so popular, they got picked back up again. And now they're experiencing a big career resurgence.
Yeah, music licensing is huge for bands. If you can get your song onto a show or a movie, some kind of medium, if it's not hugely successful, it can really boost your band or you as an artist by country miles over what you can do on your own.
Well, I can tell you this. I know when James Gunn writes, he typically will make a playlist that he'll listen to, or mixtape, whatever format he's listening on. But he has a bunch of songs he'll listen to while he writes. So I wouldn't be shocked if this was on that list and just kind of stuck. Because I know he did something similar when he did the Guardians of the Galaxy movies. And I think he fought for some of those songs to be on the soundtrack.
That makes sense. And John, you mentioned The Killing earlier. Were you talking about The Killing from Netflix with Muriel Enos?
Yeah. So Erin does a lot of great title sequences. Like her company, you can look up Swarovski. I think it's just Swarovski.com, her last name. And The Killing, the title sequence for The Killing was one of the title sequences she knocked out.
Loved that show.
If you're familiar with the opening sequence to Shameless, which I think is one of the greatest opening sequences to a TV show, I found out long after the fact, I fell in love with it, that Erin did that as well. And it's just kind of a one shot of the bathroom of this family and everyone and how they kind of use the toilet one way or the other in this household over the opening credits. And it's kind of brilliant. Because it gives you a real glimpse into their lives and who these characters are in just a one shot.
Mm-hmm. The reason I ask is because speaking of bands that, get their music licensed, the very final song that was played, I can't remember now if it was the Peace of Mind by the Jezebels, I think. But that was the song that whatever the song was, I started liking it and listening to it because of it being on that show. So that formula really works, but that was a great show. I actually started packing my apartment, in Arizona to the first two seasons of it and unpacked it in LA to the last two seasons of it.
Yeah, it was a really well done show. I was very. It's so weird because I'm talking about shows that Erin's done and movies she's done, but I was fans of them long before I realized, because you know, as much as I watch the credits, I don't always read like who's doing the titles or whatnot. Mm-hmm. I didn't realize like this was hers. Like Community and Brooklyn Nine-Nine were hers. Like these are shows that are just kind of part of my lexicon. The Killing I thought was brilliant. I was looking for something. I think I had finished watching The Shield or something. Mm-hmm. I was looking for like a new drama to like fill that space, and The Killing did it for me.
Yeah, great show. Well, let me see this title sequence, because that cow is really intriguing.
Well, the cow won't make an appearance in the title sequence, but for fans listening, you know, if you're able to bring up on YouTube the opening sequence to Peacemaker, I recommend doing so. We're going to watch it here. And if you're just listening on a podcast, you get to hear this kick-ass song again. So enjoy.
And we're going to get Scott's reaction as we go.
There you go.
Corey, I would not stop it. Just get Scott to chime in over it.
Okay.
Is that John Cena?
That's John Cena. Peacemaker.
It's weird seeing him so serious and with a helmet.
Oh yeah, it's very deadpan. The whole cast doing this is very deadpan.
I really like the room they shot that in. The lighting and everything's great.
Shot in a gymnasium.
Wow. I'm trying to get a feel for like, okay, so some people are in superhero costumes, some people are just in like a hoodie and street clothes. I don't even know what to take from this.
So some of them are support characters. He has like a team that supports him, right? And then
right.
There's his dad.
There's his dad. That's Judo Master. The little guy in the green suit. Judo Master.
That was Vigilante there.
Oh, that was Vigilante. I'm sorry.
Just seeing Robert Patrick doing a pelvic thrust sells me on this show, as if the cow didn't do it.
Judo Master will be coming up. There he is right there.
There he is.
Yeah.
There's Judo Master. Wait for it.
Eat Lee.
I kind of want to know how they sold John Cena on doing dance choreography. Did they just say, just imagine that you're in the ring, only there's nobody that you're spinning around, but spin him around anyway.
It was actually choreographed by James Gunn, like one of his neighbors, Carissa Lee Bart. And then he found, and she's actually married to Alan Tudyk. Just came in and choreographed this whole thing. And he's already told Carissa Lee Barton and Aaron Sarafowski that they really got to up their game for season two, because this thing was so popular. Season two has got to be 10 times bigger. So I can't wait to see what they come up with.
Well, now he's the president of DC. Like on the strength of this, Scott, right? On the strength of this, his work on Guardians, his career, but on the strength of this and the Suicide Squad, and just how good he is, I guess, in the room, he's now the president of DC movies.
Wow. That's impressive.
And remember, like, the Suicide Squad bombed. It didn't make any money. It was well-received, didn't make any money, but Peacemaker became kind of a surprise hit, this past summer. So, yeah, based on the strength of good reviews on the Suicide Squad and this show, he's now the president of DC Films.
I thought the first Suicide Squad did pretty well, and it was the second one that bombed. I didn't really pay attention to the numbers, but he did the second one.
Yeah.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
So, and the way that kind of works, and you know this, Scott, and Corey, you know this, but for the members of the audience listening, the first one did well because DC at the time was doing well. The second one did poorly because there was enough crap that had come out that people assumed it would be more crap. And while it was a box office bomb based on the strength of what preceded it, it was critically acclaimed. And I don't know people that have seen it that have given me bad reviews on it. Like, it's generally an enjoyable film,
mm-hmm.
right? Where the first one, I don't think you could say that about. But this brings out the best of the actors in it, and it's a lot of fun. And more people probably need to see it, especially now that he's in charge.
I think a lot of times what happens is the first one does so well and the expectation is so high for the follow-up that it's almost like you couldn't possibly reach the bar that the audience set in the way of expectation. I mean, Jaws is a perfect example. Jaws 2 is a pretty good movie, but you know, coming off of Jaws 1, how were you possibly going to top that?
So imagine this though, Scott. Jaws the book is the number one bestseller. Mm-hmm. And then they release Jaws 3. And Jaws 3 does gangbusters like Jaws did originally. But now you've only ever seen Jaws 3. Right?
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And now Jaws is released, or Jaws 2 is released. Right? Even though it's, you know, unquestionably a better movie, it's going to do worse at the box office because it doesn't – the hype going in is, oh, it's the sequel to that. This isn't right. The case of, like, you know, trying to reach the expectations of what preceded it. It's kind of like what preceded it set an expectation of, oh, I don't need to go to the movies or even tune into HBO to see this thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. It's tough. It's weird because when you love the first movie, you really do hope for the best for the second. But I think I've gotten to the point now where I'm like, I'll watch it and I'll see. Like I just watched Halloween Ends this weekend. I'll just leave it at that.
I also watched Halloween Ends, not this weekend, but I also watched it. And this is the first and last time I'm going to discuss it on any show or anything. Just by saying, I saw it too, Scott.
So we're in the same boat, yeah.
I have yet to see it. It's not streaming anywhere in Canada yet.
You're fine, Corey. You're fine.
Yeah, on this one, I'll agree.
Okay, Scott, you should watch The Suicide Squad. The word "the" is very important.
Okay.
That's James Gunn's Suicide Squad.
That's the second one.
Right. And this isn't, like, I'm not slamming the first one and the filmmaker and the people who made the first one. The first one happens a lot, is especially in these comic book movies, there's a lot of tampering that goes on with the world building, and the director has one particular vision and the studio has another particular vision, and it causes kind of a mess, and that's what you get with the first one. The second one, James Gunn was kind of left to his own devices and wasn't you know, he had to reference the previous Suicide Squad, and he has members of the previous Suicide Squad show up in the movie, but the way he handles them, he holds on to Margot Robbie and a couple of the other ones he holds on to, but he may dispose of in great ways, and because it's a James Gunn movie too, and you know, and his attitude is, this is the Suicide Squad, so these members are meant to die, so he does it in pretty fantastic ways sometimes.
Cool.
Yeah.
Can I watch the second one without having watched the first one, or should I go back and watch that first?
All you need to do, honestly, is watch the trailer to the first one so you know who was in it.
Mm-hmm.
Because that's probably the only thing that's remotely important going, oh, these are the carryovers from the last movie. That way, when stuff happens to them, you're like, oh, well, that's why that's a bigger deal. Like, that was the person from the first movie.
Gotcha.
And there's really only a few that you have to kind of keep tabs on, Harley Quinn being the main one and Rick Flag being the other. So if you got a handle on those, you're good. But what do you say, boys? Let's put a bow on this one here. John, you got anything you want to promote here tonight?
I want to promote people to go visit my friend Aaron's website, Swarovski.com, and just look at the credits of what this studio has done. She started this company in 2009, and Aaron, if you happen to listen to this ever, I'm really proud of you, and keep going, because none of us could have predicted where you ended up, and it's just fun to watch.
There you have it. Scott, maybe tell us what you got going on in your life, or maybe tell us a little bit about the Deep Dive Podcast Network as well.
Absolutely. Well, you know, for me, it's the usual bout of I'm working on a new album, and hopefully that will be out in January. I'm just actually recording the last of the bass guitar tracks through the next couple of weeks, and we'll start mixing that. And then book two of my Universal Court trilogy will be out at the end of December. And you can find all that on my website at www.scotthaskin.com. But our ever-growing brothers and sister at the Deep Dive Podcast Network, you know, this is getting hard to read the longer that this goes, as you when you do your Van Halen podcast, Corey, know. We've got T-Bone's Prime Cuts on the other side. We've got the Deep Purple podcast, Skynyrd Reconsidered, Sabbath Bloody podcast, In the Lap of the Pods, a Queen podcast, Hawk Binge, a Hawk Wind podcast, Maiden A to Z pod, Diary of the Madmen, the ultimate Aussie podcast, Universally Speaking, the Red Hot Chili Peppers podcast. Should I make a cheesy comment about how they're just giving it away? No, I won't do that. We have
I understood that reference too.
I thought you might. And the podcast Will Rock, our own Corey and his buddy Mark at a Van Halen podcast. We have, of course, Backtracks Aerosmith Revisited with the three of us. We have Backtracks theme music that you're listening to right now. We have North by South, an American and Canadian song contrast and comparison show. It's very interesting. And we have Greg and Jonathan at So Far, So Pod, So What, a show all about Megadeth. We have Kevin, our good friend at the Tom Petty Project, Quinn at And Volume for All, and Sav, Nick, John, and Mark at the Rock Roulette Podcast, all on the Deep Dive Podcast Network.
That's right. Great group of shows, great group of folks. And the podcast Will Rock has a live show coming up December 17th. I want to throw out a special plug for that one. If you're listening to this, check it out on our YouTube channel, Podcast Will Rock. Scott Haskin will be there. John Mariano apparently won't, but hopefully he can pre-record something for us. I don't know why he didn't the first time. I really wish he would have, but hopefully he'll record something for the second show. But until then, and until the next time with John Mariano and Scott Haskin, my name is Corey Morissette. Thank you very much for listening to us here today, and we'll see you next time on Backtracks Theme Music.
Batman has a coterie of supervillains. Joker, Riddler, Mad Hatter.
So what?
You said you were a superhero like Batman. Do you have a coterie of supervillains?
No, he doesn't.
So maybe you're not a superhero after all.
You want to know why I don't have a coterie of supervillains?
Why?
My coterie of supervillains is 6 feet fucking under.
There you see, Batman doesn't kill people.
Because he's a pussy.
He's a dark creature of the night.
He's a jackass who wrestles with murderers dressed like clowns and throws them in prison so they can break out of prison and then murder more people. Riddle me this. How many people you think Batman's indirectly murdered by being too much of a candy ass not to kill these fools who clearly need to be smoked once and for all, you wrinkly, Sharpay-looking, dementia-infested fuck?
Jesus. I was just trying to make conversation.
Fuck it.